Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Oh, I just hit that, David Luke. I've never done one of these drunk before.
You haven't. I found that really hard to imagine. I mean, not that you're a big drinker, but it just seems like you're hanging out with a friend. I don't know.
It was the first one I've done in the evening.
It is quite late, isn't it?
That's
great. Do you have jet lag?
I did a record this morning. I went home and had a little nap. So I'm powering on.
Who did you speak with this morning?
James Corden.
Sweet. How was he?
He was in great form. Yeah. He was in really good form, yeah.
Did he say Jennifer Garner got us into both of our schools?
He didn't mention
it. Oh, that's weird.
No,
I'm kind of a touchstone.
Yeah. No, you're
fundamental. I'm the keystone of it.
The reason he's having a great time in LA. Mm-hmm. Without you, he'd be nothing.
Right.
And frankly, the fact that he didn't recognize that was embarrassing.
It is. It's a missed opportunity.
This is a lot of chocolate.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's delicious.
Mm-hmm.
I might just rest it down there.
All right.
You've never been on a podcast before.
No.
You must have been. I can't believe that's true.
Mm-mm.
I can't believe you don't have your own podcast.
I don't want one, and I've said no to everyone, but I can't say no to you, apparently, and so here we are.
Oh.
Thank you, Mosey.
Excellent. You have got a notebook.
Of course I have a notebook.
What notes are you going to make?
I just don't want you to have...
Stuff you don't have?
Yeah, I'm jealous.
Are you going to critique me? Are you going to give me some sort of marks out of 10?
We'll see. I don't know what I'll need to write down.
I understand.
David Tennant does a podcast with...
Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer, thank you for having us here in your beautiful home.
Thank you, David.
After hours.
It is. It's cool. I'm in my pajamas.
I like that. I wish I was in my pajamas.
I felt like you'd feel most comfortable seeing me this way.
I do.
If I could have, I would have had matching ones for you.
Well, we work best in matching pajamas.
We do.
As viewers to HBO will know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that we're here in the evening because I've known you for about a year now.
I know.
Yeah. And I'm not aware in that calendar year that you've had a day off. Because you pack it in, don't you? The very fact that we're here in your beautiful home in an evening, because it was the only way we could fit this in. You have, I would conjecture, a work ethic of sort of Scottish Presbyterian proportions.
Well, I don't know if that's the case, but I do feel a kinship to your work ethic, as I know that you come from Scottish Presbyterian royalty and that you are built of such stock.
Yes.
Then I would just say thank you.
But where do you get that from? Is it a sense of duty? Is it a sense of you just love doing it? Is it a sense of...
I don't know, but it grows every year.
Does it?
There's more. I have more of whatever it is than I did 5 years ago and more than I did five
and
years
just that, ago. Is it drive or is it panic? Or
no, I don't think it's panic. It's more of a realization of how much you can accomplish and how much you can do if you focus and dig in.
Are you able to switch off, though, or is that sort of...
Oh, yeah, I can switch off.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But you pack it in, don't you?
I do. In some ways, I always have. When I think of college, I think I booked every single day with stuff back to back to back to back without ever leaving time to go to the library. So there was, you know, there was just so much I wanted to do. And I still feel a bit that way. But it all happens. It's just not pretty.
Was this sort of way of being? Was that something that was imprinted on you as a child? You are making notes. What notes are you making?
I'm drawing stars.
Okay.
And I wrote matching pajamas. just so you know. Was it imprinted on me? No, I don't think so.
Well, are your parents hard workers?
They are.
Okay.
They never stop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that was...
I saw it.
Imprinted in you.
I guess so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Very Scottish Presbyterian-esque. I just remember my dad coming home from a long day of work and starting to mow the lawn, even though it was dark. And right. My mom making our clothes, making our food, everything. She made everything. She did all the housekeeping. And she told us we were kids and we should enjoy being kids and we should focus on that.
You're born in Texas, right? But you moved to...
Oh my gosh, Charleston. Is this a proper interview?
Well, I know. Are you impressed with
that? That's so funny.
Yeah.
That's so funny that you're doing this. yes, David Tennant.
Yes.
I was indeed
but
born
then you
in
moved
Texas.
To Charleston, West Virginia.
Yes.
Tell me, for someone who's never been there, tell me what that means.
It's an enormous move. Texas is everything you imagine Texas to be. It's big personalities and big hair and
hats.
and idea of how you should, that you are Texan. And my dad is very, very Texan. And it's very important to him that my sisters and I are Texan. Our family has been there forever. I mean, my dad's name is Billy Jack. And his sisters were Wanda Joy and Vera Pearl. And Vera Pearl went by Candy. And my grandmother was Exie May. And my...
These are great names.
Yes, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Mythical names.
Mythical names. And they definitely suit my dad, who is actually pretty quiet for a Texan, but kind of has an austere... you just don't mess with him. He's very solid. And for us to be transferred to West Virginia when I was 3, my sisters and I see as this incredibly happy accident because West Virginia is the opposite in every way. It's an underdog. There's no hubris about West Virginia. They are expecting to be the joke of the news, and they often are. But that means that the people there have a different kind of personality. They are all about their character and personality, and they're all full of stories and full of, you know, crazy teeth. And it's just like it's a generation behind almost. Okay.
But you decided not to stay there and you decided to become an actor. Or
well,
did you dancing first?
I danced all the way through college.
I danced
my way through college. And then in every summer of college, I would work at a summer stock.
Okay.
Do you have summer theater?
Not in quite the same way, no.
Not in quite. I remember my friend who was on Doctor Who, oddly.
Oh, yeah.
Claudia. I don't remember, but she worked with you. She might have gone by Claudia Fox at the time.
Oh, she worked with me?
Spaces. She did. I didn't find out that until later. But anyway, I went to see her in a summer thing in the Lake District one summer. But so I know that it was slightly different from what we were doing.
Yeah. Was that professional or was that...
Mine?
One, yeah.
Well, the first summer it was a non-equity theater and I lived in a little shack behind the theater. I was the kind of the manager of the chores in exchange for the money from the Coke machine.
Wow.
And that was the only pay I got for the summer. And I gave myself the worst chores because I was scared because I was also the youngest person there. So I did the bathrooms.
Of course you did, because you took the difficult job for yourself.
Well, right.
Because
as
your...
one would.
Well, you would.
I would.
Others would not do that. Others would see that as a way out of the difficult chores.
Oh, no.
But
no.
That's part of what makes you such a special person, Jane.
Oh, no. Well, I can really clean a good bathroom, David.
Sure. I bet you can.
Can you see if you can add that to my Wikipedia page? Is it possible?
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know how you edit Wikipedia. I think it's very difficult to do.
Is it?
Yeah. Mm. I had Olivia Colman on this, furious that they'd put her age as 8 years older than she was, and she couldn't get them to change it.
I don't blame her.
No,
she
of course you'd
get
be
it.
She could
she
not
couldn't...
get it changed. You can't just phone up and go, "Hi, sorry, you've got my age wrong. Clearly a mistake. Let's
By
just fix
eight
that."
8 years.
8 years.
Yeah. Oh, that's bad.
Mm.
Oh,
furious. You can imagine. So I don't know how to change your Wikipedia page.
Okay.
Just in case you think
I'll call
that's
her.
Just in case you think that's the service I'm offering. No, she never made it. She never made it. Oh no, I think she had to produce her birth certificate or something in the end, prove it was her. Oh yes. Serious. But where did acting come from as an idea? Where did you think, were you watching TV and thinking, I want to do that?
No, never. Theater? I never, ever wanted to be on TV or on in front of a camera at all.
It was all theater-based then?
Yes,
right.
It was all theater.
Would your parents take you to shows?
They did. They were really good about that. Anytime we traveled, we would go to, my dad traveled so much he had frequent flyer miles, right, back when that actually meant something. Mm-hmm. And we would go to London or wherever, and we would stand in the half-price ticket line.
Right.
And I saw, in one trip, I saw Les Mis and Phantom, and I saw Evita. But I really didn't think that I could do it. It seemed quite, I mean, I always say, because it's true, I grew up thinking that Gilligan's Island was a documentary.
Right. Right.
It didn't occur to me. Or I just didn't give it any thought that they were actors who were...
But you were aware that people on the stage were performers.
Indeed, I was.
Okay.
Indeed.
You weren't that crazy.
No, I wasn't that crazy. But I didn't think, like, oh, I'm going to grow up and do this. It was just what I did. So that by the time I said to my mother and father, I'm switching from chemistry major to a theater major, they said, of course you are. It's all you do. You should just go ahead and learn what you love.
And they were fine with that.
They were fine with that, which is really saying something, considering.
Because they presumed that there were no precedents around you. There were no other people.
Absolutely not. And it wasn't even that I was planning on doing it for a career. I thought I'd go on to law school or go back and do whatever I needed to do to go to medical school. I didn't think that I would actually do it.
And you're certainly not thinking about movies.
No. There was a whole film world in my college, and I never dealt with it at all.
Really?
I never took a film class.
Did you watch movies? Were you a movie fan? Or
it's hard for me to sit and watch a movie. I want to be doing. I don't want to be.
Right.
But when I do, I'm so glad I do.
Okay. But it's too long sitting still. You feel a bit,
yes,
panicked that you're not.
I just feel like, all right,
enough.
Well, this was nice. It has to be really good.
Is that why you moved to New York?
Well, I moved
LA?
To New York. I finished some working. I worked in a strip mall in Florida. There was a theater in a strip mall in Florida that ended up being closed for tax evasion. And I, from there, I went up to visit friends in New York. I was auditioning for Utah Shakespeare, which was something I really wanted to do, and which I got. But I got it at the same time as I got to New York, and I went on a bunch of auditions out of backstage, and I got them all. I got three in one day, three jobs.
Wow.
But they were for horrible little theaters in the middle of nowhere. And I was just had beginner's luck. I think I just walked in and said, hi, I'm from West Virginia and I just got here. And somebody said, you should meet with agents to figure out what you're going to do. So I ended up meeting with an agent, and she said, she kind of was messing with me just for fun. And she said, show me a Shakespeare monologue. Show me a comedic. Show me a historical. Oh. And I had them all in my pocket. And so I just did them all. And she said, do a contemporary. And I was like, oh, I'll do something from this. So I just did all these. And then she said, sing for me, dance for me. And then she sent me in an audition, and it was to understudy a play on Broadway. And I got the job, and I ended up staying.
Right. And where was that?
The Roundabout.
What were you understudying?
A Month in the Country, Turgenev, with
Helen Mirren.
With Helen Mirren.
Right. You weren't understudying her.
No, I was understudying Katie Irby. You made $125 a week as an understudy at the Roundabout, so I was so broke.
Right.
You didn't have time for a restaurant job because you're there all the time.
Of course.
And I didn't have the guts to tell my mom and dad that I was so broke. I was living on a woman's kitchen floor for $400 a month that I got off the equity bulletin board. And I got a cold. I got a really bad cold. And I went to CVS. I didn't have a credit card, thank God. And I put on a check, a bunch of cold medicine, and the check bounced.
Oh.
And anyway, it took me a while of checks bouncing before I finally had to call my parents and say, I've been bouncing checks. And they had to give me like $500. I was so embarrassed. But I said to my agent, oh, it's fine. I'll go on anything. And she sent me on an audition for a pilot for something, for a test. I'd never been to LA. And I flew out because I needed the $150 per diem they were going to give me.
Wow.
And it was a day off the play. So it was a Monday, I guess.
Okay.
And then I didn't get it. I remember I curtsied at the end of it and said, thank you, I've never been to L.A.
You were Stephen Colbert's babysitter. Is this
I was,
true?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
He and I were together. We had tiny roles in Spin City as guest stars. And so we hung out backstage forever and ever. And he was kind of like, you don't seem like a normal New York actress. And I told him I'd had a babysitting business, basically, in West Virginia. And
you
he,
had?
Yeah. And he said, well, we could use a babysitter. And he was writing all kinds of things. I know because I went through his apartment and read it all. Not really. But his wife took an Italian class once a week. And so I was their babysitter and my roommate, who I actually spoke with today. She's still one of my best friends.
Have you discussed this on his show?
I have.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
His kids are...
Oh, they're amazing. That daughter is at Yale. And they sent me a picture of her. And she's so grown up and big. But they only had her at the time. You know, when you just have one kid.
Right.
And so... Yeah, they just had her. She was beautiful.
So you started doing these little bits in LA and you started being on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And did that feel like, well, maybe this is where I'll go now? Or did that just feel like, were you just going wherever anyone would employ you?
I was kind of going where the wind would blow. But yeah. I kept auditioning for Broadway plays, and I would get down to the wire. And there was one, it was me and one other girl, and she was on TV and she beat me. And so I felt like the next time I get a chance to go to LA, maybe I'll just go and that will lead me back to where I can get one of these jobs.
So you saw going on screen as a means to an end
yes.
to getting you on Broadway.
And it worked.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So what took you to LA then?
Some pilot.
Did you like it? Did you?
I mean, I was titillated by it. It all fell into place and there was a manager here who was kind of... courting me, and he was a joke, that guy. But I moved, and then I didn't realize, oh my gosh, my relationships were with the casting directors, and I've just left all of them.
I see.
And all of these casting directors have the young people that they're in love with. So it was a very tricky time. But I was so, I had, nobody was telling me what to do. I had no real push from any, you know, nobody was helping me know how to audition, what to do, how to look, how to, nothing. I went to every audition with wet hair, no makeup.
Right.
On book. I had no clue. I just had no clue.
Yeah. And what are your family making of all this back home?
Well,
how much are you sharing with them about your journey into
a lot? But the fact that I had even been on one thing ever was such a huge deal that it was kind of like, it couldn't get bigger.
Okay, so they were delighted.
We were all just like, this is hilarious. We just thought it was such a lark.
Yeah.
I mean, what about you?
Well, yes, I suppose the idea that you could get a job at all was remarkable. So that was enough to keep you going for a while. But I think my parents were always expecting me to, or hoping that I would just go and get a proper job, and 'cause then they would be less to worry about.
Were they worried when you... Because you kind of went more straight for it. You said that you declared, this is what I'm going to do.
I did. And you went to drama school. Yeah.
And you went straight for it. But did right after drama school, did you go to the West End right away?
No, I worked in Scotland for a while. So I worked in sort of... Which in a way was something more that my parents could identify with because they were theatres that they knew and that they'd maybe seen other people in. And I worked in Scottish reps, I suppose.
Oh,
That's so fabulous.
Yeah.
I just was delighted to be working. Because you spend so long with, when you decide you want to be an actor, people telling you, oh, that, you can't do that. Nobody really works. And everyone's, you sort of die in poverty. And obviously part of you is cocky enough to think, well, that won't happen to me.
You still might die in poverty.
Oh, it's entirely possible.
I think you have a good shot. I wouldn't give
never
that up.
Never say never.
No.
It's still something to hope for. But yes, I think there was just the idea that one would get any job at all initially is all you're hoping for, isn't it? When in this LA journey do you meet J.J. Abrams?
Gosh, I'd been working for a while when I met J.J. Yeah, I did a guest spot on Felicity. Maybe I'd been here, I don't know, 4 or 5 years.
Okay. Because he will then write Alias for you.
Yes. And make me, and then
and
ABC
life,
will make me audition for it.
I see.
Yes.
So he wrote
actually great. That was
he wrote the show thinking this. So he'd seen you in this guest spot and he just thought.
Yeah, he was really involved. I mean, he hadn't just seen me. He was there every day. He had auditioned me.
And what do you think he saw in you that thought, I'm going to write her a series?
Good Lord, I don't know. I think it was more his wife, Katie McGrath. I think she was more just like, do something for her.
Really?
And Katie, I mean, JJ's completely crazy about her and will do anything Katie says.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But, of course, the network don't necessarily want to give you your own show at that stage.
They had zero interest.
Zero interest.
Zero interest in giving me the show that had been written for me.
So he says, I've written this show, but you're going to have to come and jump through some hoops.
It was five or six auditions, and each one was an hour long.
Right.
And in throughout,
and you're not having to convince him ever. So it's everyone else you're having to convince.
I'm a or does bit he start, having to convince him.
Does yeah, his head, I mean, head even, start to be turned by other options.
I think so. And even after I had the job, I think there were times where, you know, I can enjoy the process of making something enough that I can forget that you actually have to take it seriously. I've been known for that to be a pitfall of mine.
I'm not saying anything.
I know, exactly. Thank you. So there were times, there were days on the Alias set in the beginning that I was so happy to be there. I think I wasn't really focused on what I was doing, and I think I could have lost my job.
Did you get a little giddy?
Oh, for sure.
Right.
As one knows can happen. Yeah.
But so you do these four auditions.
Many auditions.
Is there a point where you think I've got it now, or does it all just feel like a battle?
It feels like a battle, but I kind of enjoyed it.
You did.
Mm-hmm. And I went through the Yellow Pages and found a guy to teach me karate.
I see,
Master Shen Yun or something. Uh-huh. And he was in the valley.
Process, was it?
JJ said, you're going to have to be able to do this. And so I went every day. And toward the end, he said, what can you show us? One of the last auditions. And I had learned all these forms and I had been working on kicks. And so, but I had been a ballet dancer for 20 sure. whatever years. So yeah, I was yeah. kind of like, this I can do. This I feel confident.
Right. This presumably wasn't the sort of part you'd ever done before, though.
No, I've always played the girl next door.
Right. You do get the job, finally.
I did get the job.
Do you kind of think, oh, shit, this is going to change
my life? I don't
know,
because I'd had so many jobs by then that felt like they could change my life.
Okay.
You know how it is.
Of course,
when you're,
sure.
You know, even still, you do things that you think, oh,
but this
is going
to be. But had you
been the
lead in your own show before?
I'd been the lead in pilots before that had been on TV and been killed right away.
And initially this was just a pilot again.
This was a pilot. Okay. Who knew?
Yeah.
And JJ had never directed. And people were saying, I don't know if this guy can direct. Mm. It was his first thing directing, which it turned out he's okay.
Sure. It's a skill set he has managed to develop.
He seems to have really, yeah. I really brought out the best in him. But yeah, we didn't know what the heck we were doing. So, and we did it. And oh, the read-through, I think I almost got fired after the read-through as well, now that I think about it.
Really?
I hated the read-through.
Why?
There were so many people there and I was so terrified of all of them. And I went really internal.
Did you get anxious as this all started mounting?
I think I started to get really anxious. I started to get anxious that I was going to lose my own job. And I can see, looking back, for good reason. Now they would just, I mean, now they probably would have yanked me off. Because now they just, I feel like, don't you hear that they yank people off of things all the time?
I feel like there's almost, someone has to go after every read-through.
Yeah, it should have been me. It should have been me.
But nobody did get fired.
Nobody did get fired. We're
including yourself.
Including, miraculously,
thank
including myself.
Goodness.
Yes.
And the show does go to series.
The show went to series, and that was kind of incredible. And then it was so much work.
Well, that's the thing, because it's like a proper old network, 22 episodes a year.
Network, 22 episodes a year. I was in every
scene.
You were
in all of it.
I would work both units at the same time, and on. And our hours were so long, as any TV show, the first season is so crazy. But I would go in at 4:30 or 5 on Monday morning. I'd work out first, so I'd be warmed up.
Right.
I'd go in, and I wouldn't finish until 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And they would just say, every now and then, they would say, how long of a turnaround do you have to have? Can you take 7 hours? And I'd say, I have to go home. I have to learn my lines. I have to get up. I have to work out. I have to, you know. But I just did it. And it was so incredibly extreme. I would finish kind of Saturday morning, and then I would sleep a couple hours, have a photo shoot every Saturday, and then on Sundays I would have the language experts for the week.
And oh, because you'd have to speak Mandarin and yes. whatever else, yeah.
And then I had the fight guys come over and teach me that week's fight. So every weekend I worked straight through.
And that's what, 9 months of the year you're doing that?
Yes, but it was that intense for, I don't think I went a night without a forced call until the fifth season.
Wow. That must have felt, even with your Scottish Presbyterian work ethic, that must have felt like an endurance test.
It was an endurance test.
Yeah.
For me and for anyone around me.
So when season two rolls around and you think, I've got to ramp it up again, here we go, another 9 months of this, are you thrilled and excited, or does it just feel like an extraordinary mountain to climb?
Thrilled and excited.
Okay. Mm-hmm. 100%.
Pretty much. Weren't okay. you? Aren't you? When yeah. you're really drawn, when something has forced me to work that hard, don't you get to a place where you're thrilled and excited?
That there's a kind of, yes, there's a headiness to it.
Yeah.
You get a bit drunk
it's
on
different.
It.
It's different. I haven't done that since I had kids.
No, well, that's the thing. Yes, Doctor Who's probably the closest I had to that. And I don't think it was because we didn't have fights in the same way, which must have eaten up any downtime you had.
Stunts,
on that.
Fights.
Stunts, fights, prep.
And proper,
yeah.
proper ratcheted from the ground to the top of a building, proper, you know, jumping off of the top of buildings and going in ways that I remember later seeing. Some Angelina Jolie had done a movie downtown, and there was so much press about the fact that she had jumped off this building. And I was like, oh, I knew that building. I've jumped off that building 57 times. It was not even a big deal. It was, you know, it
furious.
Just.
Furious.
I wasn't even furious. I was just like, wow, okay. But they were just tossing me out of buildings.
Yeah. It's fair to say at that time, she was a bit of an outlier to have a kind of. This female lead character who was so kick-ass. And
I don't know. There had been Buffy. Buffy led the way.
Okay.
Sarah Michelle Gellar. She was...
You're deferring to Sarah Michelle.
I defer to Sarah Michelle.
But it was an unusual part to get.
It was unusual.
Like you said, it was
just
like nothing
an unusual
done before.
Show. There's nothing out there, you know. I just saw, you know, the commercial for that show, Hannah. That looks... It reminds me of it, but... Or it's not usual to have a female-driven action story like that.
It's more usual now, though, I guess. Yeah.
Well, now there's just so much. You can't get out of the way of any possibility.
You mean just the amount of content?
Yes, the amount of content.
Yeah. Yes, because I suppose this was the time when the networks were still... To be on a big network show meant you were famous.
Yes.
That was it.
Yeah.
How did you cope with that?
Well, I didn't even realize.
You were working too hard to know.
I was working too hard. And at Christmas, I had a Saturday morning off and I went Christmas shopping. And I went into a store like Barney's or something and I couldn't walk 2 feet and I had never been recognized. I had never had that kind of presence, even though I'd worked all these years. People sometimes would say, oh, I saw you in something, but it wasn't. I couldn't go. It was so totally overwhelming. And it was like a light switch had happened. And that was the first time
and
I really felt it.
No expectation of that.
You didn't Zero.
You didn't head to Barney's thinking, I'll be in and out quick. Because it was all new.
No, because I'd worked all this time. So I just thought it would be the same. I didn't know people were watching the show. All you ever hear is like, oh, ratings are kind of this rating. Oh, I don't know. So I just thought, oh, we're a failure. What do I know? Then I would have trips for the show to do press. Like I'd go to New York, whatever. And they wouldn't give me security. And I had this assistant who's still one of my closest friends, Juliana. And she would go with me. I think she started working for me when she was 21, right out of college. And I remember her being in New York and holding her arms out in front of a crowd. She was probably 22. And she was saying, hang on, she'll sign. She'll sign. Just give her a minute. And I remember the two of us looking at each other and saying, this is so completely beyond our control. I'd be going along living my life. And then I'd be in public and this hurricane would happen. Mm. And then I'd go back to living my life. And then after that, eventually, once the paparazzi find you,
right.
Then your whole life changes in a different way and you become cynical and you just, you know.
So you weren't cynical then. It all felt like.
It was hilarious.
It felt fun.
It was hilarious, except I would look at Jules and think her parents are going to kill me if she gets trampled.
So you felt responsible for
yes,
her.
Very much yeah. so.
Yeah.
I still do.
And during Alias, you then also go off and make Daredevil.
Yes.
So you're being kick-ass during the TV season, and then you go off and be a kick-ass superhero in your downtime.
Yeah. I was in that mode.
Had you opened a comic book ever before that? Did you know who Elektra was?
Zero. None.
Right.
I had never looked at a comic book, full stop, not once.
Oh, so you then, even when the shoot, when it...
Oh, well, then I did because, you know, we do our work.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, okay, right, yes.
That wasn't a world you knew anything of.
Correct.
Okay. And what did you make of that work? Because this also, this movie was a bit of an outlier, wasn't it? This was Marvel making a superhero film before Marvel made superhero films.
Right. That's the thing is that I was in these superhero movies before they stopped and made them good. You know what I mean? Like they really stop and they spend the money and they spend the time. And when I did them, they were just kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall.
Right.
God, we worked our tails off. And on Alias, I had done all my own fights. And so I was so determined to. But I was way in over my head. I'm not really a fighter.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere. And no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 Days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
You're a dancer.
Yeah. God, I'm a dancer. A dancer dances.
Were you happy to be this action girl? Or was it just that that's what came up? Were you
at the time, that was what came up.
You just take the gig.
But any photo shoot that I had, they were like, yeah, do a kick towards the camera. Right. And I started to feel like, oh my gosh, why do people think this is what I do? This is so not me, but okay.
People did. That's what you became known for.
Mm-hmm.
So then did it become quite important for you to find something that wasn't that?
Yes. So I decided to do this wacko little movie that had no percent chance of being any good, which was 13 Going on 30.
Which then was a massive hit.
I know, because Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah. You had nothing to do with it.
No, it was just sweet. But I just, you know, Judy Greer and Mark Ruffalo.
Were you keen to be a bit funny? Did you think this is I've done enough beating people up?
Yeah, I think I was ready to be funny.
Hmm. And it was a massive hit. So then you're a movie star.
Yeah, it was sweet.
Do you then get sucked into that whole kind of, what's the weekend box office? What's the next thing? What's the kind of... You have a team around you then who are all thinking, okay, Jennifer, let's think tactically. Let's think what we do next. Or do you resist all that?
I think I was too busy because I was an Alias at the time when it came out. So I just had my head down. It was just such an intense time that it wasn't really, it didn't give me time to stop and be like, oh, I wonder how I'm doing here.
Do you regret that now? Do you sort of look back and think they were crazy days that I just didn't get to enjoy?
No. I'm so glad that I worked hard when I could and that I did and that I'm glad that I don't look back and think, oh, I shirked that responsibility. I only regret when I did start to get really tired on Alias and I did start to be like, oh, you know.
When did that happen?
Well, the fifth season.
Okay.
I came in knocked up.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a difficult show to do.
Yeah, and I just, by then I was kind of wiped out and yeah.
And then, of course, by that time you're very famous. So then you're introducing, you're having children in a world where people want to know all about them.
Yes.
Which is stressful in a way, in a whole set of ways that you can't have predicted.
You have that at home, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't have that here.
Not as much.
No, but at home, it's really intense for you, right? Still every day, all the time?
No, not every day, all the time. Mm-hmm. No. But then I don't think particularly the paparazzi have a way about them in Los Angeles, which they sort of don't anywhere else in the world, I don't think. And that's something that you went to court to sort that out, right?
Yes, we did. Halle Berry really found a lawyer. He went to bat for us and... I went up to Sacramento with Halle, and she really was the engine. She spent the money. It was her thing. We had, you know, a bunch of us had tried, but had just found roadblock after roadblock, and she pushed through somehow. So it's all it's really all on her. And then we had all the lawmakers who, and the police officers, different police chiefs and people who would be helping us enforce the law over to our house, and Hallie and different people. And my daughter got up and gave a speech, which, you know, no one has ever seen, but about the experience of being, I think she was six, of the experience of being a little girl and being what it's like from a kid's perspective.
Right.
And that was, you know, one of those proudest ever moments in your life.
I bet it was, yeah.
For her to be so articulate about it.
So what was that change in the law specifically?
It was that they had to stop lying in wait. Because every time I left my house, every time, truly, day or night, 6 a.m., 10 p.m., whatever, there would be anywhere from 6 to 20 cars that would follow me wherever I went in a big snake the rest of the day. And that's, you know, poor me, whatever, celebrity problems. But it felt like we were a huge car accident waiting to happen for everyone in my town. I was worried all the time. And I was always looking in my rear view to see how many were there. And then I would almost be in accidents. And it made, I had active stalkers at the time that because my everything was so photographed, A, it made my kids lose their sense of what's normal and what's not normal for people. So that if someone got too close to them, and it showed my stalker where to find us. It's so crazy what my eldest especially had to go through, and that kids really just shouldn't have
to. Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's poor me, but when it's the next generation who've not asked to be there, who've not...
Because it wasn't about success, and it wasn't about, you know, I lived on the street with a lot of very, very much more successful actors than me, and they would all drive by, including Ben, and they would drive by and the paparazzi would ignore them. But if they saw me and thought I had kids in the car, that would sell. But they were so aggressive, and they still are today. I was picking my kids up and there were seven or eight of them. They got way too close to the school and the head of the school was outside with me. And I said, they're getting cheeky. And he said, I'm going to call the police. But that was today, after all these years after it passed.
Mm. Do you worry that you're sort of inflicting this on your children? Is it a kind of, do you feel what I hate it for them. Yeah.
I hate it for them. There's no point in tying myself in knots about it, because anytime that we've come up with a solution where, okay, we're going to go live here, we're going to go live there, somebody buys a camera and follows us around.
Yeah.
And then other people see it and they buy cameras. And then you have idiots driving around in their minivans with their leaving their kids in their minivans. You can hear the children screaming while they're chasing you down the block. Mm. And you think, well, I'd rather be with the professionals than with this bobo. Mm. And so it's not.
Yeah.
So it's really. You know, it's that thing of you can't prepare the path for your child, prepare your child for the path. It's that thing. Mm. It's kind of like, okay, this is part of our lives. It is what it is. And there are good things and bad things about having parents that are actors. And let's list them. And let's talk about how we deal with them. Because I can't make it go away.
Yeah. But it does alter decisions that you make about how you will lead your life.
On a day-to-day basis, yes, all the time. Because my kids would love to stop at the park. And it's just not fun if it's a photo shoot.
No.
You know, and then sometimes you do it even though it is a photo, whatever. Oh, and then there are bigger things like where you vacation or where you live or what it's like, you know, all those things.
Mm.
But again, completely woe is me when it's fine.
Yes, it's fine. But you're also allowed to moan about it.
Do you moan about it?
Yeah, totally.
How are your kids about it? But they're not. Are your children bothered less than you?
Yeah.
See, my kids are the focus.
Yeah, that would make me very. That's when I get very cross about it. If I'm with the kids, that's what makes my sort of fury. Because I kind of think I'm fair game. I sort of, on some level, I've asked for it. I might not like it, but they haven't asked for it. Yeah, and it's
and they're little.
Yeah.
And it goes into their minds. It's scary.
Yeah.
I mean, huge cameras look like weapons to kids. They don't know the difference.
Does it make you want to run away and live in a farm?
Well, it doesn't take much to make me want to run away and live in a farm. But no, because my girlfriends are here.
So. Right. But you have done a bit of that, haven't you?
Yeah.
Tell me about Once Upon a Farm.
Oh, David.
You see?
Isn't that nice how you wove that right in?
There was a little link for you.
Gosh. David, I can't believe you're interviewing me. This is so weird. I'm in my pajamas. This was so past my bedtime. I'm having vodka, for the love of Pete. Half of one, at least. She's a wheeze. Okay, Once Upon a Farm. Well, you know.
Well, it's just, I wonder if that's motivated by a sense of the life that you lead and there being a kind of an ideal version of that, which is about sort of
health.
Yes,
it's very much connected to my childhood. My mom grew up on a farm. We always were growing things. Everything, you know, that we ate, whether I knew it or not, was homemade. And so much of it was from our little kitchen garden. And then you can't help but do that for your own kids. Once Upon a Farm is part because of that. And it's partly because it's basically you look at baby food on the shelf and it's older than the baby you're feeding it to. And you can buy fresh pet food in a refrigerated section of the pet food aisle. But baby food is all like 17 years old in a jar and it's mush and it's been cooked beyond recognition. So this just kind of fixes that problem in a really smart way that babies are happy with. And so it was a no-brainer to me. The farm that my mom grew up on is now growing food for this company, and it all feels very full circle and very happy. Everything about it's very happy.
And it's about alleviating the guilt of parenthood.
Yes, because you think, I'm going to make all my baby food homemade. And then when you run out of time, or if you go back to work, or if you're traveling or something that gets in the way of that, there are no options that you can feel good about in this. You can just do it.
Mm.
I really like it.
In the same way, is it the act of becoming a parent that made you become involved in Save the Children?
No. I would have been involved with Save the Children no matter what, but I sought it out. It took me years to find who was doing the best work in rural America, and it happened to be Save the Children, which is this enormous international organization, much better known in the UK.
Is it not so well known here?
No,
ah.
It's not so well known here. And even fewer people know that we do work in the U.S. And that's what I'm totally devoted to and spend all my time on.
Yeah.
I'm going to Vermont and D.C. next week.
You really do, don't you? I mean, you took.
Oh, yeah.
You're an ambassador for them. Is
that
your
ambassador,
title?
I'm on the board, but
But I mean, lots of actors get involved with lots of charities. You're properly involved with these guys.
I'm properly. Yeah. I treat it like a job.
Yeah. And how do you compartmentalize your time with it? Because presumably you could work, you describe it as a job, and you could work all day, every day for a cause like that.
Mm.
So you must have to define what's possible and still work as an actor.
I won't leave my kids all the... So when we were working, I think I traveled for them very little. But once we finished, and I haven't worked since. That was July.
Right.
And it's now, we're in February.
Yeah.
And so I've done a ton of this stuff.
Right.
And I've done a ton of Once Upon a Farm. And it's more like that I balance it out that way.
Uh-huh.
So that in the end, it all makes sense.
Yeah. You're also in our house at home a lot now as
Mama Llama.
Mama Llama's mum.
George has told me, and I'm quite proud of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a big hit.
I'm so pleased.
And I do quite a few voices and cartoons, and none of them are played in our house.
I asked her. I said, you know, I defer to Mr. McScrooge Duck.
Scrooge McDuck doesn't get a look in to Mama Llama's mum. Yeah. Are your kids impressed by that? Do they watch it?
Not at all.
Not at all. Well, now you know how it feels.
I'm quite aware of how it feels. Yeah. My daughters won't watch 13 Going on 30. I mean,
Are they Scrooge McDuck fans in your house?
No.
Oh. That hadn't worked
but
out in the way.
But Scrooge McDuck is quite a thing. I mean,
our kids are watching it.
when we worked together, you were quite often going to Scrooge McDuck conventions.
There is not such a thing as a Scrooge McDuck convention.
Indeed, you were.
Yet,
you were going to the conventions.
There should be Scrooge McDuck conventions, and I am available for them.
You went to a couple of things.
Yeah, there was. Yeah.
Yes, you went to something at
Publicity,
Disney.
Disney things, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mama Llama doesn't require that of me.
It will. Mm-hmm. It will come around.
Oh.
Don't worry. It's going to run
around. My $50 an episode.
Are your kids impressed by you?
I don't know. I think it made an impression on them because I took them with me this year when I was given this.
Come on, you can say it.
This thing
it's
on
audio.
The sidewalk.
You can't just draw the shape in space.
Yes, when that was
surprising. You got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Let me say it for you.
I did, and that, if we're talking about this, that is the one time I've ever seen my kids kind of say, oh.
I bet. Mm-hmm. That's a big impressive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's there. It's material.
They just had never been involved in anything before.
Right.
And so they'd never seen cameras pointed in that way, in a friendly fire.
Right.
Kind
right.
of way. And how just the attention of it. They were kind of, you know, they always say, or they have said in the past, that when people see their dad, they're kind of in awe. And he's so, I mean, Ben is 6'4". He's
right.
So kind of larger than life. And he's done such
he's
incredible. He's Batman,
yeah.
And he's won 2 Oscars. And he does, he's so powerful in that way. He's such a powerful presence in person. And when they see, when people see me, they just want to come up and talk to me.
Right.
And they say the difference between the way people approach their parents cracks them up.
So the event where you were given the star, yes. They saw you in a different light, you mean? They kind of...
Yes, there they saw me not as the person that people feel like they've grown up with.
I see.
They saw me as, oh, this, you have a job that, you know...
And did they like that, do you think?
I think it was the one day I feel like they were a little bit proud.
Right.
I was awfully glad I had them with me for that reason.
I bet. That's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, do you visit it?
I have visited it.
Have you?
Yeah.
You take people and go, look, that's it.
Well, I wanted to see if it was still there because
sure.
I heard they were jackhammering Trump's up and yes. I wanted to make sure mine was still there.
Gone.
I didn't have any faith in it at all.
Whereabouts is it exactly?
Well, it's across. It's right in front of the Hooters, David.
Of course it is.
Across from El Capitan.
Commemoratively.
Mm-hmm. As you might expect. As one might expect.
Yeah. Do you get any sort of rights to squat there? Or, I mean, what does it give
you? Well, that was my question. As I said to the Hooters people, does this help me if I ever need to be a hostess?
Uh-huh.
Would you take this old bag of bones in? Well, they said it might mean something.
Right.
Because I'm right there.
You'd still have to audition.
Yeah. Definitely.
You don't just get
but
to
But I've
in.
Been a hostess before, so I'm hoping that, you know,
not
I can
Hooters,
say like,
though.
Not at Hooters.
No.
You're right. Can you imagine me in a Hooters? It's so depressing. Oh, the world would spin the other way.
You have made the world of social media spin in a way that not everyone. Did you? Are you very impressed with this?
David, you're.
I know.
The way that your transitions
are beautiful.
The segues are really, I just think it's worth noting. I hope Georgia Tennant is really listening and paying attention because I feel like she might take a special shine.
I suspect she'll be rolling her eyes at that. But but thank you for trying to, you know, big me up.
I've got your back.
Yeah. You have tamed the world of social media. You have 5 million Instagram followers.
As
in fact,
about
apparently,
a
5.1.
Oh, please, David.
You've gone up to 5.1.
No, I haven't.
You have. But you've done it on your own terms as well.
Well, yeah.
Was that something you set out to tackle? Did you kind of set that as going to, okay, this, I'm going to take on the brave new world. I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to beat it.
I've noticed you're on there recently.
I'm not on there.
You're making David Tennant podcasts.
Oh, yeah, but that's not me.
I saw your little self.
I'm involved in
some of
the content.
I was one of the early adopters.
Oh, thank
you. I said absolutely follow.
I
liked every little thing that's been on there. You crawled out of a box.
I did crawl out of a box.
As if,
yeah, but I don't really have any ownership over it. I don't. Whereas you've
yeah, we've done ours.
You've tamed it. You do proper content. You do sort of edited things.
Well, I don't know how else to do it. I don't, because you can't. Nobody needs to see my dumb life.
But the other option would be not to go there.
To not do it at all.
Yeah.
Well, it was part of the contract for Once Upon a Farm.
I see. Do you then get caught up in the sort of, oh, how many followers have I got today? How well are we doing? Do you?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I've definitely gone there before, but not that much.
But do you feel that that's part of being a public person these days, that engaging
in
that
strange?
World?
Strange. Well, there are 2 nice things about it, maybe 3. There are a few. Because it's not something I would have done. I wouldn't have chosen to do it. But it connects me to people out in the world, and that's really fun. I like reading, you know, I like people that make people make me laugh on there in their comments, and then I can have a conversation back and forth, and I feel like, oh my gosh, I just actually connected with some random person, and they're not random anymore. They're a real person, you know? And it has made me stay, it's connected me to my, to colleagues where, you know, in ways that I wouldn't have anticipated, that I feel like if I ran into Natalie Portman, whom I don't know very well, but have a great deal of respect for, because we have chatted over this, I could, we could have a proper chat, you know, whether it's her or, you know what I mean? Like that's, and then it's kept me in touch with people, whether it's Georgia, whom I adore and crack up over and feel like I know better because I see her mumbling to herself, rolling her eyes at her life, or whether it's Juliette Lewis and Ione. And that's really fun.
Yeah. And one of the things you've covered on there is Yes Day.
Yes.
Just tell me briefly about Yes Day.
Yes Day is a book by Amy Krauss Rosenthal where, you know, parents' job is to say no. And for one day a year, they say yes.
And you have embraced that.
To everything. And I've done that for several years because my kids fell so in love with the book. And I didn't realize that other families' kids were having the same reaction to the book that my kids were. And so once a year in the summer, it's Yes Day. And we go for it. We have ice cream for breakfast.
Anything they...
Just dumb stuff.
It's not about buying things.
It's not about buying things. It's not about, can I get my ears pierced? It's nothing like that. But if it is like, Mom, can I do your makeup and make you go out? Right. Yes, you can. Can I? And I really give in to the day. I get rid of my phone. I get rid of, you know, it's just about running around and doing what they want.
I know you're going to make a movie of this. Is that right?
Apparently.
Okay.
I hope it turns out. Do you want to play the husband?
In a heartbeat, of course. Yeah.
Great. Good.
Okay.
Because after this, you'll see that. See now how you owe all the people who have done this for you.
Yeah.
And how that's going to come back.
I know.
And the roost will.
I'm ready for that. And but you'll produce that as well, right?
Yeah.
Is that something you are increasingly comfortable with? That side of being on that side of things?
I am, but I don't like to pretend. I mean, I think Reese Witherspoon really goes in and properly produces. I think she finds, she reads like crazy. She finds stuff. She goes out. She puts it together. I think she is in there in a day-to-day way that I am not. Okay. And so I will produce in the way that makes sense to me, but I don't like to pretend like I'm something I'm not.
Right. So what does producing mean to you then?
I mean, I put it together and I read all the writer stuff and I have been really involved in the pitches and the outlines and the whatever. But I'm there's another layer deeper that I probably could be going that I've passed off to other people.
Right. So do you see yourself doing more of that in the future, though? Developing things, kind of being a bit more?
I've done it in the past. I like developing, but I find that you can spend all your time developing or you can spend your time doing Save the Children. You can't do both.
Yeah.
And I would rather work for Save. And I, what I like is when someone nice like Reese hands me a completed thing and says, do you want to be in this?
I see.
Yeah. I'm lazy in that way, I think.
So what is the plan? Where do you, what do you imagine yourself going on to do? Or do you not do that?
I've never had a plan. Do you have a plan?
No. No, but I love asking other people if
literally they never had a plan.
Okay.
And I didn't plan to move to New York. I moved to New York. I didn't plan to move to LA. I moved to LA. I didn't plan anything. Well, let's see. What is my plan, David? Will you, after you and I finish Yes Day, I don't know. I'm ready to be back on set. I do start to feel a pull. Once I've been home with kids long enough, I find that work sounds really lovely.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. But basically, you live quite in the moment then. You're living day to day. Because you're bringing up three kids, which is quite of the moment, isn't it?
Just really bringing up three kids.
Yeah.
And if I can escape and work a little bit, hallelujah.
Yeah. Well, Jen, thank you so much for having us in your lovely home.
It seems like this podcast is coming to an end.
I thought, yeah. You're reading the cues. Yeah. I'm just gently.
You're just segueing.
It is now midnight, so.
Is it really?
Not quite.
No, it's 10:10. Okay.
Not quite.
I started to panic. Oh, no.
I know.
The clock will go off.
I know. It's time to go to bed.
I have so many things I want to ask you.
You can do that, but we'll switch the microphone off for you.
Okay. Oh, isn't that nice?
Oh, yeah.
So when you nice get a podcast, you
can ask the questions. Thanks, Jen.
Oh, you're welcome, David. Thank you.
David Tennant Does a Podcast With is a Something Else and No Mystery production. Produced and edited by James Deacon. Additional production from Chris Skinner, Steve Ackerman, Sarah Camlett, Josh Gibbs, Dave King, Joel Freeman, and Georgia Tennant.
Also from Something Else.
The Bugle presents The Last Post, a daily satirical dive into a universe just like our own, with Alice Fraser and guest appearances from Andy Zaltzman, Nish Kumar, and many more.
There will be further discussions on a vote about whether we strap rockets to the bottom of England and launch it into space. And there will be people, Alice, who say things like, I don't think we should launch England into space.
Yeah, they would say
and
that.
And to those people they? I say, you are talking the country down. And you should be talking it up into space.
Listen now in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all good podcast apps.